Nick, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate you making the time.
Absolutely a pleasure to be here, mate. Again, you know, lots of, you know, because I live in the UK these days, speaking to another Australian voice feels very like a homecoming for me.
I know. The only other way you can get access is by turning into like Neighbours or something like that, right, over there.
Speaking to my folks, and that's about it. But, you know, to be frank, this is going to be a much more interesting chat, I'm sure.
I love it. And so, Nick, I always like to start the podcast off the same way every time, which is, if you and I were chatting at a party and I said to you, Nick, what is it that you actually do? What's your go-to answer?
Okay, so I'm going to give you exactly what I say, right? I'll do it exactly as I do it. So first thing I say is, hi, I'm Nick Bradley. I'm a business growth expert. I work with companies that are performing okay. They're doing all right, but they're not performing to the expectation of the founder. So I work with the founder and the teams to take those companies from good to great.
I love that. And I suppose pretty much every high performance founder probably thinks that their business could always be doing better, right? So I'm sure you've got a good pool of people to be working with. But when sometimes I find that people, when they hear that term business growth expert, or they hear someone is a, you know, I don't know if I want to put you in the same category, but a business coach or something like that, and they're like, cool, what does that person actually do? Like, what are the levers and things that you look at to pull on to help people go from being good to great? Like, what, like, break me down a little bit more about what you kind of assess and then help people with.
Yeah, I'll definitely get into that. I mean, there is a secondary thing I say after I do that sort of introduction, because I agree with you 100% that what does business growth expert really mean? So normally what I say then is kind of what I've achieved. And this kind of grounds it for people because it's a little bit different. So I often then say over the last decade, I've built, bought and sold 22 businesses that have sold for a combined valuation of $5.2 billion. And I'm the host of the UK's number one business podcast, which is called Scale Up Your Business, which has been ranked number one on iTunes and Spotify with just over 200,000 downloads in 130 countries. Now, you could argue that doesn't sound very humble, Nick, but you know, us Australians, we tend to be pretty forthright. But the reason I say that after that first piece is because you're right. Everyone can be a, you know, what's a business coach these days? You know, most people want the result and they want the impact. And that $5.2 billion worth of deals, if you like, or growing, scaling to that, is a pretty full-on number. And I can unpack each of those deals. So you know, quite frankly, what it comes back to is I've spent 10 years or thereabouts in private equity as a turnaround guy. And I was going into investments that these private equity firms, you know, these companies or these investment vehicles that go in and they buy under-leveraged businesses, and then they want to scale them up and then sell them for, you know, usually a minimum 2 to 3 times what they paid. I was the guy, Kim, who would go into those companies and effectively take them from that position all the way through to an 8 to 9 figure exit. So what I do now really is I work with people who have got good businesses, as I said, and they're usually quite substantial. They're usually sort of generating sort of 7 figures in revenue as a minimum. But the ambition of the business owner, the founder, is to sell that business for 8 to 9 figures within a 3-year window. So that's what I focus on. So I don't just go in there and kick the tires on any type of business. I don't just go in there and fix the marketing or do that. I'm focused on the end game. And the way that we do that, to answer your question, is we focus on 6 categories, what we call 6 peaks of valuation. And we assess every business that we go into against those 6 peaks.
I think that, yeah, that's such a good that you have that clarifier on the end, because these days, you know, it seems like people can almost become a business coach or a business expert by, you know, getting a certificate out of a cereal box. So it seems there are like so many of them out there, and it's good to hear. Some of us obviously had the success that you've had in doing that, and that clarifier I think is great. And, you know, if we actually met at a party, I'd probably spend the rest of the evening picking your brain on growing your podcast to number one and trying to get all that inside out of you. But I want to make sure this is relevant for all our listeners out there.
Yes.
They're probably not.
Well, I mean, just to build on your comment quickly, you know, and I didn't like this either, but coaching, if you call it coaching, right, and I tend to stay away from that term a little bit, just for about what I'm about to say, is that any man, his dog can be a coach. The problem with what's been going on with people losing jobs through kind of, you know, global pandemics is that everyone kind of recreates themselves as a coach. It's the number one growing job title on LinkedIn by a huge margin. And someone said to me, and I hate this as well, but it's funny. Someone said to me the other day that coaching is the new name for the unemployed. So it kind of doesn't work on a lot of levels. So I do like to disassociate myself with that because what I do is very different to any of those things.
And so obviously you mentioned you come in and like obviously taking a business from seven figures to eight or nine as an exit is not really it's not an easy feat by any stretch of the imagination from what I could imagine from the outside kind of looking in. If you were to collate all the deals that you've done and all the deals you've probably looked at over the years, is there one thing glaringly obvious that you see people when they're trying to scale up, you know, they've gone, look, I want to scale up my business and grow towards an exit or something like that they're just doing glaringly wrong? And you're like, like everyone seems to do this, like a couple of things wrongly when they're trying to grow. Maybe it's from an infrastructure perspective or something like that. Is there anything that you kind of notice as a commonality across all of the businesses that's maybe hindering them from that growth?
Yeah, I mean, it is the question. So it comes down to one very, very simple answer, and then there's some things I'll unpack as part of that answer. But people who are good at starting businesses, so really classic entrepreneurs, are not necessarily that good at scaling them. And the reason for that is it takes a very different skill set when you transition into what we call scale up, and I'll define that in a second. And it takes a very, very different mindset. And a lot of people ask me, what's the definition of scale up? And there's different ways of cutting this, but my favorite way of answering that question is, it's the ability to do two things brilliantly, the ability to lead and build teams and to work with process and structure. So two guys in a shed can create Google, but as soon as, you know, you have to have, you know, any more than say 12 to 15 employees in your business, then you have to change how you operate. And this is the big thing. A lot of people struggle with that transition of their identity as a leader, and that's where things start to go wrong. Now, that's not to say that the entrepreneur who's great at starting a business can't change how he comes across and leads and all those things to become great at scale up. But history will prove that lots of really big businesses that we see out there, a lot of times when that business is going through that transition, they have to bring other people in, sometimes even new CEOs who are good at that next part of the journey.
I can probably agree myself, because I probably find I hit up against that wall myself as we're trying to grow. We've got, you know, about 12 people on the team here now. And I can see very easily how I could fall into those traits for sure.
Yeah.
From your experience seeing people in those positions, if someone is going through that stage in that process, have you seen anything to be really effective? Obviously, as you mentioned, like people bringing in team to be able to facilitate that, maybe a new CEO and whatnot. Is there anything that you've seen like dramatically affect the growth of that leader and say, for example, CEO or founder, whoever it might be, that you've seen actually help them push through that? Whether it be studying, learning, certain mentors, et cetera, that you've seen help people get through that stage?
Yeah, and there is a bit of a kind of playbook to it, which increases the certainty around success. The first thing, and this is a mistake I made many, many years ago, because I had a pretty full-on corporate career, worked for News International for a long time under Rupert Murdoch. In fact, I was reporting into Lachlan Murdoch. Then I went into the media game overseas, a big business called Getty Images, which was my first private equity gig out of New York. And I struggled with asking for help when I had that. I had a pretty good corporate career, but it was always trying to figure it out myself. So the first thing I say is the entrepreneurs who make the transition, they need to have some level of help, whether that's a coach or a mentor, or they need to change the environment that they're, they're changing their peer group. First and foremost, you're going to move more quickly if you bring in that specialized knowledge and experience. So that's the first piece. The second piece is we created, as I mentioned, a structure called the Six Peaks of Value Creation. And that was effectively to provide a framework for entrepreneurs to grab onto so that they would have some level of precision to be able to make the transition. And it's not rocket science, any of this stuff, Kim, right? But you know, the first part of the Six Peaks, what we call peak one, is purpose. But really, that's defined as know where you are today, you know the numbers of your business, know kind of how you're performing, know where you want to be. So that may be, as we said before, an 8 to 9 figure exit in 3 years. And then know why it matters that you want to take that journey. And you'd be so surprised, because that sounds so simple, right? Of course, everyone knows that. The number of times I ask those questions or unpack those questions when working with a client, and people go, I've never even thought about this. Or I did think about this at the beginning, but I've forgotten it. And as soon as they reconnect with that, all of a sudden they get a level of energy and a level of, again, I'll use the word precision around what needs to happen. And that starts to ignite the business on their next phase of growth.
As you said, like knowing that people, how many people don't actually look at that, because it's one of the questions we ask people a lot as well when they come to us, and it's like, cool, they want, you know, for us, they come to us for marketing. They're like, cool, we want more leads. It's like, cool, why do you want more leads? Like, I want to grow my business. Why do you want to grow your business? They're like, to grow it. And I'm like, oh, okay, like surely we're going to have a better reasoning behind it. Otherwise, yeah, it just seems to like keep hitting that glass ceiling and then bouncing back because they don't have that, you know, that purpose that drives through why they want to get to that, why they want to get to an exit or anything like that. Has there ever been a time where someone's come to you and you go, actually, look, you may want it, but like you don't have, maybe not what it takes, but it's like your business is not built to be able to do that. And then you've had to maybe even turn away or go, look, I'm not the person to help you. Is there anything that kind of identifies someone as someone who you go, look, the business that you have is not structured for scale, for you to be able to take it to that level? And what are some of the characteristics that might pop out in those scenarios?
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing is that if someone has the ambition to create, as we say, significant value, so much value in a business that someone else wants to acquire it, and that, as I said, is where we play. So if someone has a lifestyle business, in other words, they just want to have a few employees and they want to make six figures, that's not really where we play. There are obviously better people to help in that area. I just don't think that creates enough certainty, again, around, you know, avoiding disruption. I mean, for me, having scale actually matters, right? It matters for a number of different reasons. So if someone has the ambition to take their business to that sort of level, you know, that sort of, as I said, 8 to 9 figure exit, certainly a business that's generating seven figures of revenue and therefore making decent profit, and quite often they won't be structured to scale. So quite often when they first have a conversation with me, I often say they're in plateau or they don't know what their next move should be. But the important thing to your question is they have the ambition. And what that says to me is they are prepared to do what it takes. They're prepared to listen to advice. They're prepared to do whatever action is required. They're not going to be so arrogant that they think they know what's next. And I applaud that because it's hard to start a business. And most people start a business and they do get stuck along the way. The people who then are aware that they need help at that point are the ones that I can help, because I know what the playbook needs to be. And the playbook that we work to, it's not what I call overly templated, but the principles fit on any business, any geography, any sector, and the stage is the most important bit. And then we can get them to where they need to get to. I mean, our strike rate of working with businesses with those characteristics I just described is exceptionally high. We have one client this year who's tripled their revenue through COVID just by applying a better methodology around predictability of revenue flow, which is one of the peaks. And so for me, it's that. I don't work with anybody who doesn't really believe that they can do it. Now, that might be something I can pick out very quickly, in making excuses, as being the victim. And I certainly don't work with anyone who's not prepared to try new things and experiment, because they have to have that level, again, of awareness to be able to break through.
It makes a lot of sense. Obviously, you mentioned the six peaks. Are they in a sequential order? Or if you go into a business, do you go, hey, hang on, I know that peak five, I could literally pull that lever and that's going to like dramatically help us to start off with?
I'm conscious that we're teasing everyone here, aren't we? Okay, I need to say what things are. We're dancing around, mate. Okay, so I'll just give you what they are and then I'll explain how and why it kind of works, right? So the six peaks are, the first one, as you said, is purpose. The second one is profit. The third one is proposition. The fourth one is predictability. The fifth one is process. And the last one, the sixth one, is arguably the most important when you're going through scale up, is people. So again, none of those six characteristics is going to be rocket science to anybody who's ever read a decent business book. However, what I've done with them is I've applied the best practice characteristics. So what does great look like versus good against those? Think of it like a dimension. And when I think about those exits, that 5.2 billion of kind of deals, all of the ones that had the biggest multiples at exits, the ones that kind of almost astounded the founders, had those six peaks in some level of congruence. So the answer to your question is, when I go into a company, I have an assessment that I have people do. It's called the Six Peaks Scorecard. And that is around 40 or so questions. And that gives me a very, very good sense of which of the two peaks out of the six are really not working. And the way to think of it is finely tuned engine, you know, all the cogs, everything needs to work in that engine. And you know when one of the things is out, when one of the valves is out and the engine sounds terrible, if you just tweak it a bit and then everything sounds amazing, it's very much like that. So it's not sequential, but each of them need to be to a certain level for that engine, that machine to run. And so what I'll often do is someone will do the assessment, will come in, will say, okay, you're not doing very well at predictability of revenue flow. You're not doing very well at leveraging processes and automation. We're going to work on those two peaks and we're going to get them up so they're level with the other areas. And then what will happen is you'll get a compound effect of everything starting to work. The other thing that can happen, just to be really transparent, is as you improve those two areas, you then have another area that starts to fall away a little bit. So you need to tweak that. But the whole outcome is over 12 months. And that's the minimum that we work with someone. We go over 12 months and we basically strip it back and we rebuild the thing. By the end of it, you'll have all of those peaks working to an optimum level for A, where you're trying to take the business, but more importantly, the characteristics of the business from a, you know, what it is, the business model, etc.
From all of the people that have done the scorecard, what's the two most common? You mentioned you look for like the two lowest, like is there two where you go, they always fit in those two categories?
Yeah, there's three that jump out actually. So it does depend, but the one that jumps out the most is proposition. So that is effectively, are you clear on the market that you are really operating in? Are you clear that there is a problem that really exists? And do you have a remarkable solution for it? Now, again, it sounds simple, right? When we're talking about it, Kim, but the problem is this, right? Someone who starts a business, they may solve a problem that existed at that point in time. And if we went back maybe two decades, that problem would exist for maybe 5 years, right? Because the world was moving much slower. These days with technology, that problem that existed a year ago might be obsolete in 12 months' time, right? You must see this in some of your clients. So you'll get this fixated entrepreneur who's going, yeah, I'm solving this problem. And I'll go, well, hold on, is it really a problem? Well, yeah, it was a problem 3 years ago. When was the last time you actually looked again to see if it's a problem? And so we go into that, we go and speak to their customers, we go and do a bit of external validation, and then we come back and say, you know, the problem still exists, but the way that people are wanting to solve that problem's changed. So your product and service, what we call the value proposition, and the experience they get needs to change. So that's a great one, because as soon as you line that up, then all of a sudden, you know, everything else starts to work. And then the second one that people don't get right is predictable revenue. And this is probably the bit that you'd come and play with your company, because we are so metrics driven in what we do, and we have precision all the way through the funnel. So we know exactly, and this is a guy, I've got seven companies and every one of them is run like this. We know exactly where there is a bottleneck, and we have very, very clear ways of measuring all of that. So we have a thing called LAPS. So you might have a similar methodology. So it's leads, appointments, presentations, and sales. And we know on a monthly basis exactly what numbers need to sit against each of those four characteristics. And then, so we can say, we know that we want to close five deals a month. So they're five sort of six-figure deals for what we do. And we know exactly how that's going to work. So it becomes extremely, as I said before, predictable. So they're the two that jump out probably the most.
I have to say this, like, especially when I speak to people, as you say, like, it's surprising how many, as you say, like, you would think it would be easy for people to be able to identify what they do in a marketplace, who is it for, and how it stands out. But it's surprisingly, like, a low number of people that can actually answer that question when it gets to it. So I'm not surprised that one jumps out for you as well. And now taking us down, like, a slightly different track, I mean, just purely because I'd be upset if I didn't ask. What do you put it down to for having your podcast be so highly rated? What do you reckon is the key to your podcast success growth?
I knew you wouldn't want to ask this.
I have to ask it.
You have to ask it. And you know, and there is value here, I think, for people listening as well, because I use the podcast as one of my strategies for driving everything in the top of funnel. So I often say, particularly to small and medium businesses, you're missing a massive opportunity right now if you don't have a personal brand or someone who's fronting the business, because people buy from people they know, like, and trust. And it's much more powerful to be able to create that rapport through a person-to-person connection than it is by trying to necessarily market your business. So effectively, this is what I've done. First and foremost, my podcast, Scale Up Your Business, is about everything you could think about in terms of business, right? So that's the boring piece. Like, you know, every man and his dog can do a business podcast if they've had some level of success, probably working in business. But I do two other things. First and foremost, I tell my stories, warts and all. And some of them are difficult sometimes for people to hear as much as they are to say. But I want people to know what the reality is like when you're going through this journey. So I've had some great moments and I've had some really challenging moments, both personally, professionally. And I tell those stories because I want people to get the understanding that entrepreneurship is a roller coaster and you've got to have broad shoulders to be able to do that. And not everyone can. Not everyone's prepared to do it. And the other thing I do is I blend what I call the emotional state and the mindset that's required in business all the way through, because I'm a big believer that 70-80% of business success is how you approach it from your emotions, how you manage your emotional state and how you manage the way you think about things. And if you have a practice or you have some level of kind of goals around your own personal development, back to, you know, that identity as a leader, you are giving yourself so much more momentum to succeed. And because I talk about that, the warts and all stories, and again, all the different things I've done across everything, across that whole startup to scale up to exit model, people have gravitated to that because it just comes across in a differentiated way.
Love that. I think that's so important, as you say, like when it comes to doing it, because a lot of people want to start a podcast and it's like, cool. Well, as you also, number one, have to know the purpose of it, but you've got to be able to give something that stands out. Which is what I try my best to do here by just unpacking and not just being, I do solo episodes where I talk about marketing stuff, but not just being talking about marketing and Facebook ads and whatnot. I'm going, cool, how can we like pull apart what successful people do in their businesses that everyone can do? So that's why I always like to run this podcast as well. And plus it's a good way to meet awesome people like you, Nick. So
you can't. Well, you know, that's the other, you can't, I mean, there's a couple of other bits just to finish off on that, I think, which will help people. First and foremost, you're right. Having great conversations with fun and interesting people is the gift that you don't realize when you start. And so every conversation I have, be it whether I'm going on someone else's podcast or whether I'm having people on my show, I learn something every time and I connect with someone. And I've done, I think now the latest count, I've done 5 really substantial business deals off the back of meeting on a podcast. I mean, well into 6 figures. One of them's close to 7 figures just off of meeting on a podcast, right? So that's the other thing that people don't say. And the other thing that I've done as well, back to kind of how do you make money from this? How does it become a commercial thing? So I balance it because I genuinely want to help people. You know, it does make me feel good and that helps with my own mental state. But I've also managed to be able to turn all that content that I'm doing into a very, very precise machine. So my podcast is populated and repurposed across multiple channels. I have a whole social media plan that sits underneath that where I'm putting out something like 40 to 50 bits of content per week across other channels. And, you know, we'll have someone listen to my podcast. They might, sometimes they binge it. They like do a Netflix binge and then they'll get in touch with me and I don't have to pitch what I do. They've already made the decision that they want to work with me. So really, it's really just qualifying whether that's going to be a good fit. And that changes the whole game in terms of how you grow your business in the more traditional sense, you know, spending money on advertising. All those things are important. We do those things too, but it's balanced now with this very focused inbound approach.
I wholeheartedly agree. So anytime I've spoken to someone who's listened to the podcast, they already think, like, they feel like they're already a friend of yours because they've, you know, probably, as you say, if they binge it, and who knows, you've got 80, 100 tons of episodes, and if they go for 20 minutes, half an hour, so, oh man, you've spent like 50 hours listening to me. It's like, you know, there goes people say it takes 21 touch points or whatever to have a, so if someone listens to you for 20 hours, they're probably safe to say they like you somewhat. So it becomes a much easier conversation.
And you feel great about it. I mean, I get, there are lots of people who, it's, as we say, it's very top of funnel, right? It's very broadcast. I get lots of people who reach out and say, you know, you've changed my world, you've changed my business. I did a couple of podcast episodes recently. One was called The Power of Three, which was all about how you focus more on 3 things across everything you do. And I did a really personal one, which is called Lessons from Loss, which were when my grandfather and father passed away and what they taught me about business and entrepreneurship. And those things connect with people, right? And a lot of the people that listen, I can't help. They're not really of a level or a stage in their business where I'm going to help them commercially, but I'm helping them just through the content that I'm putting out there. And that feels amazing.
100%. Now, Nick, as we get towards the end of our time here together, I always like to ask the same question, which is, what's the question that I didn't ask you that I should have?
Oh, you know, someone asked me this ages ago. And one question you haven't asked me is what my biggest failure is. And the reason I think it's an interesting question, maybe a bit of an obvious question, is I think you can learn as much from failure or the perception of failure as you can from success. So we've talked about all the business success, but we haven't talked about that. So there you go. How's that? Yeah.
Please, well, fill me in. What's the biggest?
Oh, see, that's the problem. When I thought about that, okay, I need to get better at this. But okay, so I'll give people this, because I think this is probably one of the most powerful lessons I had. So I had a bit of a breakdown 5 or so years ago, before I pivoted into what I'm doing now. So as I said, I've got a number of companies, and I've got, you know, a whole heap of really great things going on, and I'm hugely grateful for that. But what happened was, and I alluded to it, whereby I chose a pathway in my early 20s, which was to go into the world of employment. And I chose that pathway because everyone in my family had told me that you have to have a job to be successful. And if you were an entrepreneur, there was too much risk. And if you go down that pathway, you're going to fail. And so the people that I trusted, I believe what they said. Interestingly enough, some of the people in their world that were the most successful were more entrepreneurial. But I started my first business when I was 18, sold it when I was 22 as a personal training business back in Adelaide, South Australia. And I kind of gave up on this entrepreneurial spark to go through what was about 15 to 20 years of corporate. And I spent those years in massive frustration. I was successful because I was bullish and a bit of an ass, and really direct, but I was a frustrated entrepreneur. And it culminated with this breakdown where I was just pushing everything so hard that I was so focused on trying to be resentful to the choices I'd made, that I was showing up as a pretty poor husband and father. And I eventually started getting sacked from all these private equity jobs. Had some good successes, but I kept getting sacked because I was, you know, effectively telling the chairman to go stuff himself. And anyway, long story short, but the failure of this and the epiphany of this is this. I think we all know what we're meant to do intrinsically, right? We all feel if we're on the right path. So if you're going through something and you might not be having the greatest amount of success, but you know that you're on the right path, you still feel congruent with your values. And for years, I wasn't doing that. And so my biggest failure was not recognizing that earlier, and maybe not trusting myself and believing in myself enough to go down the pathway I'm doing now. The good part of that story is that I did find it at, you know, an age which was not, you know, debilitating. It was in my early 40s. I hazard to think what I would be like if I hadn't been brave enough to face that choice and that decision in my 60s or 70s, because I think that's where you start to look back with regret, because the time may not be there that you had in the beginning. So I share that with you as a failure, even though obviously it's ended up pretty good, because I think there are probably people listening to this today who are in that boat. They're in a job, they hate it, they're thinking there's no way out, they're probably drinking too much and doing other stuff to repress it. My advice to you is you need to face this head on, because actually jumping into that fear might be the best thing you ever do.
Yeah, it's a pretty good and nice way to wrap things up there. That's a great insight from that as well. As you say, it's amazing when you can pick that up early rather than waiting to the times when you look back and in the future potentially you could have regrets around that. So that's a key takeaway for everyone there as well. Now, Nick, if everyone's gone, look, I kind of like this Nick guy and I like what he's about, where's the best place for people to connect with you online? You obviously mentioned your podcast, which we'll link to. Where's the best place for people to find out more about what you're up to?
Yeah, so a couple of different things. So a couple of resources for people if they want to do that. So the podcast, obviously, they can find that. It's on all the outlets. Just look up Scale Up Your Business and my name. We have a group on Facebook, a community there, which is around 2,000-3,000 at the moment and growing. And it's a really nice, I'm very conscious that I don't make that a spam fest. If people have questions they want to ask the group, then the whole community is helping. But if they want to find me personally, they can come to our website, which is SUYB, so scaleupyourbusiness.global. We even have that 6 weeks scorecard on there if someone has a business they want to put through the ringer and those questions. And the other place to get me personally is LinkedIn. I tend to hang out on LinkedIn a lot. If people want to send me a message, I always promise to go back to them personally. It takes a bit of time sometimes these days, but if people can be patient, then I'll always come back. But that's the best way to come and get in contact with me.
Beautiful. We will link all to all those things. So guys, wherever you are watching or listening to this, either scroll up or down, check the show notes, and we'll have all of those links there for Nick. And if you know someone who's going through scale up at the moment, or maybe you've been hearing them talk about a few of the things that we've talked about today and they don't know how to get past that, please do share this episode with them so that they can find out more about how they can get past those, you know, those roadblocks and hindrances, and figure out ways to get around them as well. And hopefully they can also check out some of Nick's work too. But Nick, again, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you making the time.
No, Kim, it's absolutely awesome to be on your show, mate. Thank you for having me.